Each person's going to have different needs, and through the CCAT, we're able to identify what those needs are.
Welcome to CCAT in Practice. I'm your host, Danielle Malangoni. This is the first in a three-part series on effectively implementing the CCAT, an initiative funded by the Bureau of Justice Assistance. Today, we're going to hear how the CCAT is being used effectively in the field. And to help us with our discussion, I have the pleasure of welcoming Sarah Thompson, the Therapeutic Court Coordinator from the Spokane Municipal Court. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Danielle. I appreciate you having me.
Let's just dive right in. Why don't you start by giving us some context regarding your court project and the role that you play within it?
Absolutely. So I am the Therapeutic Court Coordinator for Spokane Municipal Court. I oversee our five therapeutic court programs. I've currently been working in therapeutic courts for about 7 years. And with that, we have a community court. Our community court currently utilizes the CCAT assessment. And I think that's what we will be focusing on today is our community court.
Exactly. So how is the CCAT being used in the community court?
Yes, the CCAT is being utilized to identify risk level and need. So we are looking at the risk level very minimally. That is just going to help us identify whether someone might be with us for 3 months, possibly up to a year. We don't want to necessarily have someone who's identified as a low risk in our program, you know, too long. So we utilize the risk component of it. But really the biggest chunk that we focus on is the needs that are identified in the CCAT.
So Sarah, who administers the CCAT and at what point in the process is it being used?
The CCAT is administered by the Therapeutic Court Office. I have a team of four. We conduct the CCAT assessments prior to anybody entering into our program. So community court is a voluntary program. And with that, they are required to undergo the CCAT assessment just to help us, again, identify those risk and need levels.
So what type of training and experience do the interviewers have? And how long does it typically take to conduct the full CCAT?
To conduct a CCAT, the requirements are that you have a high school diploma. However, our team is all bachelor's level or master level. That is not a requirement. The CCATs do generally take between 10 and 15 minutes. They are not a true clinical assessment, so they are not overly invasive or anything.
You just indicated that it's not a clinical assessment. And so recognizing that this is not a truly in-depth psychosocial tool, are there other questions or areas that you explored during the interview process?
Yes, we have found that the CCAT is very beneficial for helping us to identify when somebody needs to go for additional substance use, mental health, co-occurring, or trauma assessments. However, there are other basic needs that our participants often have that we would like to identify. Part of community court's focus is on behavior modification, harm reduction, and just basic meeting the basic needs of individuals. So through the CCAT, we determine the basic needs that they have identified in that assessment tool. But through further discussions with the individuals undergoing the CCAT, we're able to identify if somebody is in need of assistance obtaining their identification, which can be a barrier to obtaining housing, or if they need assistance setting up insurance, if they need disability assistance, civil law assistance, whether there's women-specific services that are available to them, clothing, food, any type of family parenting classes, library services, case management. There's really a whole gamut that we really assess for to make sure that we're treating the person as a whole, that we're not just focused on the substance use or mental health.
So you mentioned some of these additional data sets that you're collecting. Were those just added to the CCAT, or are there additional clinical assessments that you're using in conjunction with the CCAT?
We are using the CCAT to identify those needs. So if, for example, would be the substance use. We have the substance use provider on site at community court to conduct substance use assessments. That way we are able to identify that need and match them with the level of care that's currently identified. So if someone needs to go to an inpatient, or if it is something for an intensive outpatient or just outpatient services, we're able to connect them with the current level of care.
So in addition to using it to identify substance use, how else is the information being used to inform decisions in the community court?
Yes. So the CCAT specifically identifies education, employment, housing, substance use, mental health, and trauma. So with that, we identify those six specific categories, and then we utilize our additional screening where we are asking those follow-up questions, whether it's ID, because you need that to get a job, so to cover the employment component, or to cover the housing. You're not going to make it far on a housing list without any ID. We're utilizing the findings of the CCAT along with our additional questions that we ask of our participants to provide that to our attorneys so that they can work on what their overall sentencing conditions would be.
And how is this a shift from how things were before or from traditional case processing?
This is a huge shift. Through community court, we're focused again on the behavior modification. We're focused on harm reduction and meeting those basic needs of individuals. We are looking at individuals as a whole, as a whole person. Each person is going to have different needs. And through the CCAT, we're able to identify what those needs are. We want to focus on the individual. We don't want a one-size-fits-all type of program. So with the use of the CCAT, we're able to really identify those needs. We're able to work with people to obtain all of those services and connect with our community providers. It's more hands-on. It's a shift from the traditional model.
Recognizing the concerns nationally over the R&R model, can you talk about how Spokane is minimizing any potential negative impacts of using a risk tool? And how it's actually been helpful to you instead of harmful?
Yes. So we have found that by using the CCAT, we're really removing a lot of the negativity that surrounds typical risk assessment tools. With the CCAT, they don't focus on any geographic demographics. They don't focus on the race or ethnicity. While there may be a question on there about race and ethnicity, it does not have any scoring into the overall assessment itself. So with that, we're able to really capture true what the risk is for reoffense so that we are appropriately placing people into our program. You know, we don't want to put people low risk into a higher level population where we are essentially over-programming them. Really, our biggest focus is that need component of the CCAT. That is 90% of what we are looking at. And so we are using that to really determine what interventions we need to take to really help with behavior modification, to help get past these low level nuisance violations, to really meet the basic needs and to focus on the person as a whole.
When you first started using the CCAT, you found that the paper system was a bit challenging. How did you fix this?
Yes. So originally the CCAT was a virtual digital form, captured everything, and then it transitioned into just paper copies. And so our entire teams would just print out the copies. We would conduct the CCATs and then those would go into a file. And when you're conducting over 600 CCATs a year, trying to capture any data off of those is going to be really labor intensive. So we worked with our IT department and they were phenomenal in getting this form built into our actual system. So now we conduct them on our computers. It does a tally. It does all of the scoring for us, but ultimately allows us to capture all of those metrics so that we can look at how many people we are referring out to housing, how many IDs we are purchasing every year, really focus on what needs we are meeting and possibly where we may be lacking just so that we can make improvements.
So you talked about using the data collected through the CCAT to make improvements. Can you say a little bit more about that?
Yes, our team will review any of the data every quarter. So we are looking at all stats that we have collected. Part of our review is to find out if we are meeting our target population. Part of our review is to identify any additional community partners that possibly where we might be lacking or we have shortcomings. Maybe people need life skills and we need to reach out to additional agencies for life skills, possibly connecting people with other self-help or pro-social activities. So again, just using the metrics to continue to improve our program.
Because the science is always changing, oftentimes we're trying new programs or we're using new assessment tools. But it seems like Spokane has been using the CCAT now for roughly a decade. Why do you think it's working? How has it been sustainable?
I believe that it is sustainable because we're not focused on geographic. We're not focused on demographic. We are focused on the individual. We're focused on those individuals' needs. We want to help them with their substance use, their mental health, any other trauma, their housing, their education, their employment. And through the use of the CCAT, because we've been able to expand it to really identify additional needs or community partners that could possibly lend some assistance, the CCAT has just been a great foundation for us to build on and improve our program.
Sarah, thank you so much for having this conversation with me today.
Thank you, Danielle.
Just a reminder to our listeners that this is part one of our CCAT in Practice podcast series. If you want to hear more, please check out parts 2 and 3 in the series, where we discuss clinical considerations and the importance of data collection. To find the rest of our podcast series and corresponding webinar training, you can visit our website at innovatingjustice.org. Sarah, thanks again. Thank you.